What is going on, everybody? Welcome to the Fear Being Average podcast, episode number 37 of the Health, Fitness, and Performance series. And today we take a look at the topic of everyday foods that are actually superfoods. And yes, there is a difference from actual superfoods, or at least how we view them. Typically, when we hear a superfood, we think of something relatively novel or fresh or scarce, where these foods are foods that are in the grocery store basically all year round. They're very available, and we probably eat some of them without knowing how beneficial and good they are for us. So we're gonna do a deep dive into 8 of those foods today. We're gonna look at what makes them superfoods and how we can add them into our daily nutritional routine. Like always, you can rate the podcast, share the podcast with someone who needs to hear this or wants to hear something about how to maximize their nutrition and get the best result that they are looking for. And of course, you can subscribe to the podcast. That way you don't miss any new episodes that are coming your way, which is always a good thing to do, because if it's out of sight, it's out of mind, and that way it's going directly to you automatically. All right, guys, enjoy today's episode, and we'll see you on the next one. What is going on, everybody? We're back on the Fear Being Average podcast. Today, we take a look at foods, and not just any foods, but superfoods. Obviously, with the title of the episodes, we're going to look at superfoods that are everyday foods. So is there a difference? Sure. Superfoods can be things that are relatively novel, that are really great for us, but they're not something that we introduce into our, you know, daily routine. But then there's other foods that, you know, you typically find in the grocery store. They're things that we eat almost subconsciously, and we don't necessarily know that they're so packed with amazing ingredients and nutrients that are really helping us perform at a very high level emotionally, cognitively, personally, physically. So that's what we're going to focus in on, because it's like if we didn't know these foods existed, and say they didn't exist, then all of a sudden they were discovered, these foods would be the ones that would be listed as superfoods, right? Yeah, I think it's just because we consume them daily and they're fairly regular in an average person's diet, hopefully, that they're kind of dismissed as underrated superfoods. So that's maybe even a better name for these foods, underrated superfoods. So very important, and you'll notice there's a bit of a theme to this. The foods that we mention, what categorizes them as superfoods is they're very nutrient efficient, right? Very nutrient dense is probably a better way to say it. So they have a lot of their portfolio and profile of the nutrients in these foods is very high, meaning they can contain a lot of different nutrients that are beneficial for the mind and body. They give us energy. They provide us with important macronutrients, important micronutrients. They are very satiating. They help us with weight gain or preventing weight gain. They help us prevent inflammation in the system. They help strengthen our immune system. They help limit the opportunity, or they help limit the risk of obesity. They taste good. I think that's an important quality. These aren't foods that are, they taste like dirt, and I'm suggesting you eat them. I think they're the foods that are relatively palpable, and you want to consume them. And that would be kind of how I would categorize superfoods, right? All those things together. If they contain, you know, one or three or five of the things that I mentioned, that would be warranted of a superfood. So that's what we're going to look at today, of what everyday foods are actually categorized as superfoods and why they're important for you to consume them every day. And the nice thing about this is once we put it together, for a lot of people, they have a hard time structuring their eating. And I, you know, typically hear this with, especially with nutrition clients, they have a hard time filling their day with good foods. And to me, it's rather simple. It's pretty straightforward of how I eat and the structure that I use. And I think this is going to really complement people, the people's uncertainty of how to select foods how to introduce certain foods. Because I'm sure everyone's eating these to a certain degree, but maybe it's done on a regular basis, and they don't know the importance of adding these in every day. And I think when we do that, we are going to dramatically improve our caloric profile. So we're going to get way more healthy, nutrient-dense forms of calories, because I don't think eating in a calorie deficit, or at least a massive, large calorie deficit, is doing us much good. There is research, obviously, that shows a slight deficit can be good for the body and for longevity, and living a long, healthy life. You don't always have to eat in a surplus, but maybe there's times where we want to put on lean muscle, and we know the research behind building muscle is relatively, or not even relatively, incredibly important, and having more lean muscle mass and increasing our metabolism and, you know, improving bone density and joint health is so critical to long-term health that, yes, there's going to be a point in our life that eating in a surplus where we're taking in some more protein, taking in more healthy calories, taking in more healthy carbohydrates, and an efficient amount of fats is going to be really good for our body to become stronger, to gain muscle, and ultimately help us achieve our goals of a improved physique and long-term health more effectively. So that's where we can definitely play around with, you know, introducing more calories, but in a very efficient manner, right? Not just taking in, you know, calories mindlessly and hoping they're going to work for us, and all of a sudden we find ourselves in a 1,000 calorie surplus and we're putting on unnecessary fat because, you know, we're obviously not in the space just to jump into that much of a surplus. So it's that fine line of eating calories that are going to help us achieve our goals, but not doing it without intention. But it's really hard to eat these foods, or eat a lot of these foods mindlessly, because they are so satiating. They are packed with vitamins and minerals, and they're high in proteins and fiber and healthy fats that, like I said, they keep the body full and they keep the cravings down, and they help regulate our hormonal profile, which will help us with those signals that we want the body to experience, right? We obviously want this feeling of fullness. We want this feeling of, you know, our body not needing more calories or more energy and feeling like it has a lot of energy to perform the tasks that we perform at a very high level. So let's jump into this one. We got eight. We're looking at eight superfoods today. So that's what we're going to roll with. First one being beef. This is no particular order, but beef, I like to start with this one because it is villainized. You know, right? You obviously have a lot of people that, you know, that whether they're doing it for a moral reason or they've heard things about, you know, inflammation or heart disease, and they demonize beef as this, you know, this food that is getting in the way of our health, right? That's actually causing long-term health. And there's a massive debate within research and within the two sides a few years back, but now it's really coming around where people are saying you cannot deny the benefits of beef. It is one of the most nutrient-rich foods on the planet, bar none, right? It is loaded with nutrients and very important nutrients, and it is giving, if you were to pick maybe one food for the rest of your life that you had to eat to get the most nutrients out of, beef would be at the top of that list. Now, of course, how that beef is prepared makes a difference, right? Are we talking about grain-fed beef compared to, you know, grass-fed, all-natural beef? Okay, there's a massive difference there, right? Lean ground beef. So that's where you'd want to obviously make sure that it's not processed, it's not, you know, filtered with a bunch of things that are causing disruption within our gut microbiome. Or immoral for that matter, right? I think that for a lot of people, it's the fact that they don't like how the animals are treated, and which I'm totally on board with as well. Obviously making sure that we're getting it from a whole source and a highly integral source. So yes, incredibly nutrient rich. Beef is also very high in protein. So when we take a look at improving muscle recovery, enhancing physical performance, and mental performance for that matter, improving joint health and bone density and achieving greater levels of muscle hypertrophy, beef is going to be a staple food, right? Beef and potatoes, beef and rice, we always hear that for bodybuilders. And again, you might be thinking, I don't want to be a bodybuilder. Well, if you're trying to build your body, you are subconsciously becoming a bodybuilder in some degree. Maybe you don't want to become a high-level bodybuilder, but you do want to build lean muscle mass on your body, which is an admirable goal for you, and because it's healthy, it's good for you, it's empowering, it builds resiliency in your body, and it's going to create longevity, which is very, very important and vital to overall quality of life. So very high in protein, very important to get these very nutrient protein-rich foods into our diet, because a lot of people underconsume this nutrient and it becomes a massive holdback when we're talking about building lean muscle mass and increasing the feeling of being satiated, you know, being full on our food, right? Beef is also high in healthy fats, so our monounsaturated fatty acids, also our polyunsaturated fatty acids. In terms of the micronutrients that are probably most prevalent in beef that are they're widely known for, you'd be looking at iron and zinc and B12. If we look at B12, basically it is vital to proper functioning in basically nearly every system in our body, especially our nervous system. If you think about our nervous system, this sends the connection. It creates movement throughout the body. It creates responses. So it's very vital that we have a high degree of vitamin B12 in our body. There was actually a study presented that said 39% of the population is deficient, but deficient to such a degree to cause a neurological dysfunction. So again, if you think about that, if you're talking about someone with a high level of neurological function, right, they're able to respond and act accordingly and move appropriately with very little limitations, that would be optimal, right? To think that 40% of the population not only is deficient in vitamin B12, but deficient enough to such a degree that we're actually going to have a negative neurological effect, that is highly concerning, not only for the physical, but also for the mental well-being of us, right? And we think about zinc. I went to a conference, I think maybe 2 or 3 years ago now, and I remember this is the one thing that really stuck with me. A lady was giving a presentation, she was talking about micronutrients, she mentioned zinc, and she always said zinc for the dink, okay? So for us males listening to this, and even females, right, realistically, if zinc is helping with libido, or it's a natural supplement to increase testosterone levels, it's important. Like, we know how important zinc is, but this just happens to be what I'm talking about right now is the sexual aspect, but also the physical, because I think those two are relatively related, obviously. You know, if we have higher testosterone, not only are we building more lean muscle, are we more driven? Does our mood improve? Are we functioning more optimally? But obviously, this directly correlates with our libido and our sexual connection, right? Zinc is also incredibly vital in many functions in the body. We know the importance of immune health. Obviously, with COVID going on, there was tons of talk of getting your vitamin C in, getting your zinc, getting your magnesium, all those things very important for our immune function, anabolic responses, and obviously blood flow and circulation and more oxygen to the muscles and arteries. And the good thing is, zinc is also highly absorbable in terms of the nutrients as well, so it helps us absorb nutrients a little bit more effectively. And again, that's a big thing. Sometimes we take in nutrients, but we don't actually absorb it and get the benefit of it. So anytime that we can take in those micronutrients that help us absorb more of the nutrients that we are consuming, obviously the better, and we're going to maximize and optimize what we're taking in, okay? Number two. We're looking at eggs. Yes, good old eggs. These are something or foods that we should be eating every single day, in my opinion. It is a food I eat every single day. And I eat a lot of them. 3 to 4 eggs per day. Feel great. There's a lot of connection, not only to the health markers and benefits, but also really beneficial for post-workout. I don't always do it post-workout, but after hearing that, it gave me a little bit more clarity and focus on maybe, you know, adding some egg yolks post-workout. If I haven't eaten my 3 or 4 eggs that day, I might throw 1 or 2 hard-boiled in post-workout. Again, very nutrient-rich. We got a lot of B vitamins, a little choline, selenium, vitamin A, iron, so a lot of the same properties that we see in beef as well. It's a lot of the yolk that it takes that generates these micronutrients. So let's just be mindful that, yes, egg whites are a very good source of protein, but the egg yolk is what really delivers a lot of the micronutrient benefits. Eggs are also loaded with protein, 6 grams of protein per egg, loaded with antioxidant protection and properties as well, which can help with our vision and eye health. So sometimes we go outside of the external, what it's doing for our physical performance and how our body looks and performs, and we start looking at the things that we overlook, like our skin, like our nails, like our vision. Those things are vital to quality of life, and everything we do, everything we consume, it should always go back to, is this enhancing or is it negatively affecting my overall quality of life? If what we're consuming is enhancing and improving our quality of life, it's worth mentioning and it's worth consuming. So not only do we see the overall health markers of eggs and the nutrients that it contains, and obviously the nutrients it contains are going to be very beneficial for our immune system. They're going to be great to help fight off, you know, pro-cancer cells. They're going to be great for relieving inflammation in the body. It's actually going to increase good HDL cholesterol. I know there's that whole thing where people are saying eating too many eggs is going to, you know, jack up your cholesterol. Well, it's going to actually help increase good cholesterol for the body. But also, like I said, if it's doing those small things that we kind of take for granted, when our skin looks good, it looks vibrant, it looks vital, when our nails look healthy, when our hair looks full and shiny, and obviously our vision is something that's not being affected negatively. Like, those are important things that we have to make mention of and we have to give time and attention to, because without those things, you don't notice how your life, you know, gets affected until those things get affected. So taking in foods that are, yes, superfoods that help across the board are going to be really vital to increasing your well-being and making sure the things that you take for granted stay relatively strong and vibrant, okay? Then we're going to move into, and by the way, eggs, guys, let's be honest. You can cook them 10,000 different ways, right? Like, I'm hard-boiled, over easy. You want to do fried, over hard. You want to do an omelet. Do you want to throw them in a pancake? Do you want to put them into a shake? Do you want to put them into a muffin? Do you want to add them to your beef when you make a patty? Do you want to scramble them up? Figure out different ways. Don't be that person that says, well, the eggs are boring. Make your eggs fun, right? Load them up with veggies. Load them up with meat. You know, load them up any which way you want, but get eggs into your system. Find a way to enjoy them, to like them, and make them something that you enjoy, and that they're not a chore. I know my girlfriend Mel, she's not a big egg person, but again, I do my best to, and she eats eggs every day, mind you. She's taking that on as a practice, but I do my best when I make her eggs to make them taste good for her, right? I load them up with mushrooms and garlic and pepper and onions and peppers. And whatever else I can throw in there that will kind of take the taste of eggs away, and maybe she'll have steak with it or bacon. Either way, it seems like she enjoys the breakfast now, so it's our duty to make it taste good, not be that person who just says, I'm not going to eat it because it tastes like crap. We'll make it taste good, right? You're an adult. Figure that one out, right? Next one, we got blueberries. So any berries would fall in this category, but blueberries, it got me thinking the other day. I was listening to a podcast, and they were talking about, I think it's called Aci berry, so A-C-A-I berries, and they're known for, you know, being a superfood. And it's one of those things, I feel like it's just more of a superfood because it's rare, it's novel, it's something that's been introduced to the public in a fairly, scarce space. Where blueberries are everywhere. You know, you can get blueberries any which way at different grocery stores, and they're not this delicacy. If we didn't know about blueberries, going back to the introduction of this podcast, and we found blueberries all of a sudden, and they were this scarce entity, we would go, oh my God, like, there's so many amazing things with blueberries. And I think the research is well documented how incredibly healthy blueberries are. But because we consume them and they're available to us, across any grocery store and chain that we go into, we almost undervalue the benefits of getting them into our diet. I know I do sometimes. Sometimes I see blueberries there and I go, yeah, I know they're good for me, but how good? And you should be introducing them into your diet because of the health properties, let alone how good they taste, right? So there's a lot that blueberries do, right? Obviously, they're a nutritional powerhouse of vitamins, minerals, fiber, and antioxidants. We know the power of antioxidants. Think about antioxidants as things that fight off free radicals. And free radicals are those damaging things within our body that are actually creating cell damage, their pro-cancer properties. Those are what free radicals do. They kind of mess up your internal system. So antioxidants are going to be really important to making sure that they actually help fight against the free radicals. And with that, we're going to notice a reduced risk of heart disease. We're going to look at improved markers of fighting off cancer or pro-cancer properties. We're going to see a reduction in inflammation. And blueberries actually contain the king of antioxidants known as flavonoids. So again, that's just a type of antioxidant that is really beneficial for the system and for the body, right? We also see a lot of connection with blueberries to brain function and improved memory and alertness and focus. A lot of research has even shown that blueberries and foods containing a high antioxidant profile to fend off brain degeneration. If we think about what would contain brain degeneration, would be memory loss, apathy, so a lack of enthusiasm, anxiety, mood changes, agitation, irritability, that kind of stuff, right? So we want to consume foods, and there's a lot of books written on this that not only benefit our body, that really benefit our mind, because we know the connection and the relationship between the mind and the body. So it's really important that we put a lot of time and attention into consuming foods that not only have a small influence, but a relatively strong influence on that connection to our brain, and strengthening that to not only improve the cognitive side of things, but improve decision making, be more aware, increase motivation, and get all the other health properties that are going to come along with it, right? And like blueberries, they're loaded with vitamin C and K and manganese, and just a powerful tool to throw into your diet. And how do you put it in? How do you add it in? Obviously, you can add it as a snack with certain food. Now, I use the word snack lightly, because I don't want people to get used to just eating blueberries on their own, because I've noticed with clientele, if they do that, they get in the habit of not having a protein, and before you know it, they only have two meals that contain protein, and they're eating 40 grams of protein within the day. So blueberries, I say, add it to meals that contain protein. So with your eggs in the morning, add a half a cup of blueberries. Put blueberries in with your oatmeal and protein powder. Have blueberries on your protein pancake, something of that nature. That's what I always do. I have a frozen bag of berries containing blueberries, cherries, and blackberries. Now, sometimes blueberries on their own. And I'll throw that on top of my protein pancakes, or I'll throw them in a protein smoothie, of course, right? Okay, guys, we are moving on to, and as you can see, it seems like a pretty good damn diet right now, doesn't it? Pretty dang good. So we're going into olive oil. So let's look at an oil, right? We haven't looked at one yet, and this is the king of all oils. So olive oil, natural oil, obviously it's coming from the fruit of olive trees, a very high mainstay of Mediterranean diet. If you don't know what the Mediterranean diet is, it consists of a lot of healthy omega-3s, lean proteins and plant-based foods and whole grains. So think of things like berries and nuts and seeds, and fish and plants and olives, right? And eggs. It's very natural, very wholesome. If there's one diet I would recommend someone to take on that would give them basically everything they need, a high protein profile, some good healthy carbohydrates, a very good nutrient dense diet, the Mediterranean diet, I really don't see any harm with. Where other diets you'll kind of notice there's a little bit of a deficiency, I think the Mediterranean diet is a fantastic approach to life, because it's not, you got lentils in there, beans, that kind of stuff, so it's not saying no to a lot of things, right? Which I always am a little bit cautious of when you have a diet that kind of tells you not to eat a particular something. This is more highlighting a lot of nutrient-rich foods and telling you to minimize the foods that may contain some negative properties if you overconsume. So they're a little bit more holistic that way, but fantastic diet to follow if that is something that you're a little bit confused in with the space. But you'll notice a lot of the foods we talk about fit right into that category of Mediterranean. So again, olive oil, high levels of those MUFAs we talked about, such a type of fat, right? The monounsaturated fatty acids. With olive oil, you will notice, you know, reduction in inflammation. Again, going back to the antioxidant profile, high level of antioxidants. You'll also notice they contain vitamin E and K, which is a fat-soluble vitamin. So very important, right? Because fat-soluble vitamins, they don't just have a catchy name. You need fat and healthy fats to absorb these fat-soluble vitamins. It's like water-soluble vitamins need water to be absorbed. These fat soluble vitamins, D, E, K, and A, need fats to be absorbed effectively. So it's a nice pairing when you're taking in a fat like an olive oil, and it contains healthy micronutrients that are going to be absorbed effectively because you're pairing it with a healthy fat, right? We can also see a reduction in insulin resistance, which is really imperative. We obviously want to make sure that that we're doing well there, because that's a major effect of obesity. When we do have a high level of insulin resistance, right, we obviously want to be more sensitive to the hormone. And how we use olive oils, how do we put them in, how do we engage them into our diet? Again, they're good for some extra healthy calories if you're looking for some. If you know, let's just say you are in a muscle building phase, but if you're not and you're just eating healthy and you're eating mindfully, it's a good tool to not overconsume shitty salad dressings and cooking oils that are not doing your body a lot of good, right? So we can add olive oil to salads, of course. Be mindful. Don't just dump a cup on your salad. You know, two tablespoons will be, you know, sufficient. Pasta sauces, I love doing garlic and olive oil. If you can chop up actual garlic, that's fantastic. Cooking, just make sure you're on a relatively low heat. And then obviously you can put it on foods, right? If you want to have a little bit of a dressing, if you're putting on, for me, I've added, you know, a tablespoon onto my rice with some lemon. It works for me. Again, I'm always looking for a couple extra calories here and there, and it gives it a little bit of a taste. So just make sure you find a good tasting one, right? And we see a connection to a reduction of heart disease, diabetes, and inflammation that we talked about earlier. So very important we get olive oil into the diet. It is a no-brainer on that one. Moving on to avocado. So this one's probably one of the more known superfoods that it was kind of highlighted and really presented as a superfood. Maybe it's not part of everybody's diet, you know, every single day compared to an olive oil or egg or blueberry or beef, for example. Maybe it's more of a delicacy for some. I know for me, avocado is not in my diet regularly necessarily, not done by, you know, on purpose necessarily. It's just sometimes I'm feeling like it, sometimes I'm not feeling like it. But when I do have it around, I love having it as an add-on to my salads or, you know, a side dish in my meals, especially a nice ripe one, obviously, if they don't go ripe or if they go crappy, which you have that little timetable of a good, healthy avocado, right? You'd rather too hard than too soft, that's for sure. Really good to add into your diet. It's a healthy source of fat and fiber. Sometimes we see avocados as a fat food, in a good way, but actually has fiber in it as well, which I kind of learned over the last few months too. I didn't really think of it as a food that would contain a lot of fiber, which it does, which is obviously going to help, you know, improve the feeling of being satiated, which is going to help us consume less and crave less of the crappy stuff. Then we also have a lot of healthy micronutrients, the main staple being magnesium. Magnesium is a very critical micronutrient to improve the absorption of vitamin D. As we know how effective vitamin D is, it is seen more as a hormone than it is as a micronutrient. That's how powerful it is in terms of, you know, mood boosting effects and anabolic hormone response. And when we see high levels of magnesium in the system, we're going to see a reduction of the potential of type 2 diabetes. We are going to see our blood sugar become regulated. We're going to see a decrease in the potential of heart disease and improved immune function. So magnesium, one of those staple micronutrients that we might not hear all too often, because we hear about the importance of vitamin C and zinc and D, but magnesium is that precursor to D, right? If we have a lack of magnesium, for example, but we're taking a high level of vitamin D, we're not able to absorb as much of the vitamin D as we're taking, right? So we might actually still have a nutrient deficiency of vitamin D because we're not absorbing the nutrient that we need in order to absorb vitamin D effectively. So magnesium, a critical component of a healthy diet, making sure our body functions optimally. So avocado, a great tool. The one thing I'm going to warn people about, a lot of people love their new avocado toast. It's a, you know, a big rage. I see people get it. The problem is it doesn't contain a lot of protein, right? So don't make it a meal. I'm someone who tries to program the mind in an optimal manner. And I think one of the best things we can do is get used to having protein with all our meals. That rarely, you know, does any bad to the body or the mind. It's probably one of the better tools we can introduce into our life is by adding protein into all of our meals. You'll notice an incredible response from your body and mind without doing much of anything, right? Without switching up a lot of stuff, just adding protein in. So when you do avocado toast, do it with a couple side eggs or put a fried egg on top of it. It's just something I've noticed people do, or they have avocado toast as their breakfast and all of a sudden they don't eat again until 1 p.m. and they're at 5 grams of protein for the entire day, and they really set themselves up for failure that day in terms of getting enough protein in their body to repair their muscles, build muscle, and stay satiated. So make sure we pair avocado with a high protein food. And this is where beef comes in. We just mentioned eggs. So again, do something. We're a little bit more mindful of that, okay? Now we're going to go into nuts and seeds. So I talked about the Mediterranean diet earlier, and I made a quick mention of nuts and seeds. Very powerful tool in a healthy diet. There are, for one, an abundance of nuts and seeds we can't eat. So there's a nice variety right there. Really quick, let's go over them. Almonds, highly known for their benefits for heart health. Everyone, all these nuts have benefits in other ways, but we're just going to talk about the main benefits of each. Cashews have been known to positively affect cognition. Brazil nuts, we don't need a lot of them. They're big, so 3 to 4 have been known to have a high degree of cancer-fighting properties, and there's a high degree of selenium in them. I think it's like a 110% of your daily recommended dose with like 3 or 4 Brazil nuts. Walnuts, same thing, a high antioxidant profile to help fight off cancerous properties. And they're all good sources of fat, healthy fats that is, all good sources of fiber and even protein, right? So this is where you might want to throw in nuts to your oatmeal bowls with protein. They're good little add-ons to your salads even. They're good for snacks. If you do blueberries, a couple hard-boiled eggs with nuts and seeds, and another food I'm going to make mention of shortly. I don't want to spoil it, but that's definitely a good superfood, underrated superfood for sure. And then in terms of seeds, right, we have flax seeds, hemp seeds, chia seeds. These are packed with vitamins and minerals. The good news is when we have or when we consume healthy fats, high fibrous foods and foods that contain protein, this is going to help with weight management. It's going to help with obesity. It's going to help with overall health markers. So make sure to add these little things into your diet, right? Be mindful that we're not taking in cups and cups of these, because obviously that they're rather calorically dense. So yes, they're great for us, but if you take down a cup of walnuts, that's 800 calories, right? That it adds on really, really fast. So be mindful. I love the notion of pick a nut and do, or a mix of these or seeds. The nuts would be a quarter cup, and the seeds you'd be mindful of is usually like a tablespoon or 2 tablespoons here and there for 80 calories or 100 calories. So, but these are great add-ons to certain foods and salads just to make it a little bit more nutrient dense and add some healthy properties to what your diet already looks like. Okay, moving on to whole grains. So whole grains, I don't know if people still think they're bad for us or what, but I know grains became demonized recently for I can't even keep track of why these foods get demonized. All of a sudden, you always feel like there's a new food that's on the no-eat list. But whole grains, we can look at them as ancient grains. Those are the grains we want to go towards. You obviously want to make sure they're not highly processed. What contains a whole grain? It would contain the three main aspects of it, the bran, the germ, and the endosperm. That would constitute a whole grain. Be mindful that the whole grain is usually the first ingredient in whatever product you are using. Hopefully there's not a lot of ingredients to the whole grains that you're eating. Hopefully there are one to, maybe three, four, or five ingredients max. Hopefully if we go over them quick, look at rice, barley, quinoa, oats, for example, would all be examples of amazing, healthy, ancient grains, ancient whole grains. If you buy one of these, they should contain one ingredient, rice. Barley should contain barley. Quinoa should contain quinoa. Oats should contain whole grain, 100% oats, right? That's how to look at how to select your foods appropriately. Whole grains are a great source of fiber. Again, fiber, really important for healthy bowel movements. Great to keep us satiated. Very, very just healthy for us all around. Obviously, they have a nice antioxidant property, whole grains. I wouldn't say obviously, but they do have a nice antioxidant profile. They're full of vitamins, and then you even get some protein involved as well. I think quinoa might be like 6 or 10 grams of protein for a cup of quinoa. Pretty good considering. Again, I always like to average at least about 25 to 30 grams of protein per meal. But again, that with a protein source would be a phenomenal meal as a whole. So these foods, they're very satiating. So again, they're going to prevent us or at least halt the idea of us over-consuming them. It's easy to over-consume foods that aren't very nutrient-rich because they lack that aspect of keeping us full, right? They're quickly absorbed, quickly digest, and before you know it, we're hungry an hour later or we eat like two bowls of it, right? You're not going to probably eat two or three bowls of quinoa or oats or rice. So you're going to feel full and you're not going to want to eat much more. And then the whole grains are also great for reducing inflammation. Just make sure that any of the whole grains that you do eat, they don't disrupt your gut, obviously. This kind of goes without saying nowadays, but there are a lot of foods that are good for us that might not be good for you. So be mindful, even though these are on the superfood list today, if they do something negative to your body. Now, again, that could be that you're not used to it, so maybe you introduce it in a small manner. You don't go all in with this. Maybe you do a quarter cup of oats to try first, or maybe you add in a little bit of quinoa or whatever it is, and you slowly start participating and increasing your whole grain consumption. Before you know it, your body gets more used to it. But just be mindful of it because you never want to eat something that is disrupting your body. But if you are someone looking to build lean muscle, improve, physical performance, whole grains are a staple, right? It's nice, full, dense calories. You're going to get a lot of nutrients from it. You're going to obviously get a lot of carbohydrates from it, and carbohydrates are not the enemy. They are a very important part of building lean muscle and enhancing our performance abilities to signal that muscle growth and get the nutrients in our body to obviously repair and build lean tissue. So really important that we add whole grains in and we do it in a very mindful manner. And finally, we're going to take a look at cheese. Yes, cheese. A cool thing I just read. Scientists at the University of South Korea said that cheese is the perfect combination of protein, calcium, and vitamins and fat. So that's good news, right? Perfect combination. And cheese was that food I was going to say would go great with some nuts and seeds and a hard-boiled egg. That's a nice little mix of health right there, right? A couple blueberries on the side. Boom. Bob's your uncle. You're good to go. So yes, the cheese contains a lot of healthy omega-3 fatty acids, relatively high in protein considering like a nice old piece of cheddar, I think it's like 5 grams of protein. You do two of those, or throughout the day, or even one of those with something else. That's pretty good. At least you're getting some, now we're getting somewhere, right? Getting 5 grams, added on with something else, it adds up, right? Calcium, obviously, maybe we've forgotten. I don't know. Calcium back in the day, everyone talked about being great for the bones, great for the joints, great to keep the bones nice and strong, right? for whatever reason, we've demonized, you know, cheese and milk and dairy. So we got to do a better job here, right? We can't just dismiss foods because someone told us they're bad. Go ahead, eat foods that are not highly processed. They're organic. They're natural sources. Dairy is an incredible tool for us if we can stomach it. Obviously, there's some people listening to this that they'd probably dairy would just mess them up entirely. But I don't know. So you got to try it out, right? You got to introduce these things. Cheese is certainly not the devil. It's not something to be villainized. It's a healthy, like I said, perfect combination of so many vital nutrients that our body needs to function optimally, right? The vitamins that cheese contains, zinc, the vitamin A, B12, riboflavin is another B vitamin, just so important for our vitality and overall health. And cheese is actually a probiotic as well. So it contains this property that I'm going to mess up because the word is crazy long and weird. Here's a probiotic that cheese contains, okay? Propionibacterium frutinrici, okay? So that's, you Google that by me just saying that, you're never going to find it. You'd have to spell this bad boy out. But it's about, I don't know, 26 letters long. But again, this probiotic can reduce inflammation and can boost our immune system. So another added benefit of cheese, right? The key is get it from sources that are made from 100% grass-fed animals, right? That's where we want to contain or consume our cheese from. We don't want to get those Kraft singles. Don't think that's an opportunity for you guys to slap that on some whole grain bread and say I'm eating healthy, because Brandon's Fear Being Average podcast told me cheese was great. Do be mindful. Like, get good sources of cheese, and you can't really go wrong unless your stomach says otherwise, right? But don't demonize it until you try it and see how you feel on it. If you take it down, if you're able to add it onto your omelet, put it onto toast, have it as a snack with a couple hard-boiled eggs and nuts and seeds like we talked about, and it works well for you, it feels good with your body, you are going to get a lot of healthy properties into your system that you weren't previously necessarily getting or might have been a little bit deficient in. So there you have it, guys. Those are the 8 everyday foods that are actually superfoods. So now that we know this, be mindful to add them into your diet, add them into your daily nutritional guide, and use them appropriately. That way you get all the benefits of what we talked about today. You perform better, you feel better, and you look better. So you can't really go wrong with that combination right there. Guys, thank you so much for listening to the podcast. We will see you on the next episode of the Fear Being Average podcast. Have an awesome day and take care.